Late Richie Havens with his iconic song, Freedom. It became an anthem for the struggle for peace, freedom, and equality in the United States and for all oppressed people all over the world. After 45 years in the business, health problems forced Havens to announce in March this year that he wasn't going to be doing tours anymore. And sadly, a month later, on April 22nd, he died of a heart attack at his home in Jersey City, New Jersey. He was 72 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. It is Wednesday, October the 23rd, and the madness continues in Washington, but we're not going to be talking about that today. We'll be talking about sanity today and the sanity of crafting a political alternative, and that is with a party called the Freedom Party in New York. And it's our discussion today. We've been talking, of course, about the Freedom Party along the way, but our discussion today takes us into crafting a political alternative that will work. As you know, the Freedom Party, so far as we have discussed it, has come about because of the clear and evident danger that the current political leadership poses in distressed communities, especially African American and Latino communities, communities of color. And so the idea came about to reinvigorate the political effort that had been crafted some years ago. You may recall the Freedom, Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party and the United African Party of New York City. But it is in that spirit that this Freedom Party has been launched, and in a short time, it has covered a lot of ground. It has, in fact, qualified for ballot status in the upcoming general election in New York City. But there is a long-range plan, and we are going to be talking about that today, to get people interested in, as I said, we can't stomach the Democratic Party. We can't deal with the Republican Party. The so-called parties of progress simply do not have an ongoing presence. And we're looking at constructing alternatives, organically grown leadership. And it is in this regard that our guest is to be introduced. Our guest is Alton Maddox, attorney at war, the people's attorney, who for decades has been a legal strategist and litigator of precedent-setting criminal and civil rights cases. He's one of the most important figures, I think, in the story of contemporary civil rights struggles and grassroots empowerment in New York City and state, and even beyond its geographic borders. Alton Maddox is no stranger to us. As you know, we talked about the long-standing case he has been litigating for 26 years, and which came at a steep price to his professional ability to practice his profession. But These things have not daunted him. He has remained steadfast in service of the community, and most often, in fact, almost always, without pay. And I welcome you, Alton. Sorry about starting late today, but Gary ran a little late with his program, so it overlapped. We do this from time to time when we have something important to say. But thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for the invitation, Eutrice.
Well, Alton, let us deal with this business of crafting a political alternative in what is shaping up to be a very interesting election in New York City for mayor and other offices. But tell us about the Freedom Party, and in what context does the Freedom Party envision this political contest and where it can go within it?
Well, first, Eutrice, I think we have to embrace those things that are well accepted. And what is well accepted throughout this world as we know it is that people must not only have an individual voice, but they must also have a collective voice, particularly in the area of politics. And our stay in this country, our forced stay in this country, developed to a certain point where in 1863 there was the Emancipation Proclamation, and then there were several Reconstruction Amendments that came after that. And while we have done things in so many different areas in this country, educationally, agriculturally, and culturally, and otherwise, we have never been able to really do anything but sharecrop in the political system. And the time for a call to end plantation politics is now, and it is important for us to engage in those things that politics usually accrue, including the right to politically bargain, the right to political leverage, the right to have a political voice that the group demands for it to be protected, and the other attributes that are so important for us in our existence, not only in the United States, but in our existence in the world.
Well, could you go a little bit deeper into the two main things you just talked about, the right to politically bargain and the right to politically leverage? What do those terms mean?
Well, those two things I will cite just by giving an example of what is coming up to many people throughout the country, and that is the general election that's going to be held in many places in November in most places. And what that means is that to just simply have voted in the Democratic primary, for example, most blacks vote Democratic, and then to later to go be into the polling booths in November without a political strategy and without a political party that you have crafted and not have had one that has been crafted by others and that you are sharecropping on it is very critical, and critical in the sense that you have to look at the various possibilities that could occur, for example, in New York City on November 5th for the Freedom Party, which has two candidates that are running, one for mayor and one for public advocate. And, of course, the intent of all people is to win. However, there come a time when that may not be realistic given the circumstances of the people themselves and other circumstances. But under those circumstances, you want to have a plan B. And in New York City, that plan B would make us the swing vote. And if we are not necessarily the swing vote in this particular election, in which, as people are currently reporting, William de Blasio is the obvious next mayor of New York City and leading the polls by 40% or more, then we want to jockey ourselves in a position where we can watch him as a political party and criticize him on the mistakes that he is making, and to be in a position in 4 years to be the swing vote at the very minimum in the next general election for mayor. And what is significant is that the power of one really rules politics. And we've seen it in so many different areas. For example, this country, in the end, allows the U.S. Supreme Court to decide most of its naughtiest decisions. And that body is made up of 9 justices. And what is important is that one person in an equally divided court try to get the center position. And that's been going on for decades. And in the current situation, that is Justice Anthony Kennedy. And so what happens is he becomes the swing vote. In much the same way that a political party, when it is outnumbered, can become the swing vote. And as the swing vote, it is the most important vote in the election. And so the strategies have to be, A, to win, and B, to be the swing vote, and still have sufficient political leverage and sufficient political bargaining to be able to achieve your goals and the timetable that you've set to enjoy those goals.
Well, in observing how this political party was formed, and formed in the foment of, as I said before, the lack of leadership and the clearly documented distance between the leadership, if I could use that word, and I use it very loosely, the leadership, political leadership within Black and Latino communities particularly, and the objective conditions of their oppressed communities, this party comes into being. The idea is to begin to build on the disfranchisement, if you will, of these constituencies, to bring them under the leadership of the Freedom Party, and to now have a real tool, a leveraging tool, to exact from whatever system exists out there what is needed in these communities. And so in the short time that the party has existed, one, you have certainly gained ballot status. This is really remarkable, because you're going up now on the rough side of a mountain, and to think that without any major publicity, you certainly haven't had media coverage, you certainly haven't had all these, you know, the wide attention that the media would normally give a new party, including, let's say, the Tea Party. You haven't had that. And still, you were able to garner that many signatures to be a bona fide presence, with ballot access, and with 2 candidates running. That is a major, major victory. Could you talk about that? Because I think that is a major point that people need to get, that when there's sincerity of effort, you do find that people understand where it is you want to go. And could you give us an insight as to how you evaluate the strides you have made in such a short time?
Well, one, I think that people need to know that there were many who were inspiring as to the formation of the Freedom Party. And I certainly don't have the time right now to include all of them in this conversation. But generally, I would just like to give deference to them. But one of the people that I will talk about in this conversation is Kwame Ture. And Kwame Ture was actually in Mississippi himself during the formation of the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party. And during the 1980s and 90s, Kwame Ture was a frequent guest at the Slave Theater in Brooklyn, in which we, as the United African Movement, held its weekly forums. And so a large part of what we have come to now is a result of his teachings, is a result of the teachings of Amos Wilson, and also certainly the teachings of other ancestors who are no longer with us, and one of those would be Malcolm X. And one of the things that Malcolm X said, and I need to point this out to people, I'm a stickler for education and history, and I'm a stickler for respecting our ancestors and following solely in their path. And so Malcolm X said there must be education before legislation. And so a large part of what we've done over the years has been to develop a political education for our people. And certainly that has not been easy, as you pointed out, because you are also dealing with the question of censorship. And so therefore you don't have access to the airwaves as you are lawfully entitled to. And then you also have other matters such as interference from other people operating on behalf of other interest groups who really see a Freedom Party that's black-led and black finance as a threat to their existence. And you also have the teachings of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, and you also have the 17-point plan of Congressman Adam Clayton Powell. So there's a wealth of work that has actually been done before we even started this effort. And what is important to us is to always stay within the realm of the teachings of our ancestors, and then to be able to clearly understand what they were saying, and then commit ourselves to those teachings without any question of a fear or anything else that might undermine our effort in this area. So the beginning of this certainly started with so many others, and, you know, and we have an official letterhead, and we try to list a lot of those on our letterhead, because that doesn't even include all of those that have been important. But I think that what is important is for us as a people to recognize that as between the living and the dead, like other civilized groups, we need to go with those who have proven themselves over time and have carried this struggle up until this point.
So we come back to Plan A and Plan B. Plan A, of course, is to garner as many votes as possible in the general election, and you have two candidates running, Michael Graves for mayor, and I forgot the other last name of the other Michael. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at my notes now.
Right.
For comptroller.
Public advocate.
And how is that going?
Well, you know, this is what we have said from the outset. The first thing we have to do was to get on the ballot. And that this wasn't our first time getting on it. So, you know, we do have some foundation for being able to achieve that. The second thing that we wanted to do was to become a full-time, full-year party instead of a seasonal party. season in the sense that there's a short period of time in which from, let's say, this year, July until August, about 6 weeks, you go through this whole process of gathering signatures and all of that. And, you know, we went through this in 2010 as well when the top prize was the gubernatorial race. We are going through it now when the top prize is the mayoral race. But what we wanted to do this time was to recognize that it's not enough just simply to get on the ballot, and it's not enough to just simply get the signatures. But what is important is for us, A, not to be anything near like the people that are currently representing us. And so there should be a clear distinction between what we have now and what we are striving for as a political party. The second thing is that we need to recognize that we need to iron out all the wrinkles, particularly between here and next November 2014, when we should hopefully be operational and not only be able to be acquire automatic ballot status as a political party, but in addition to acquiring the automatic ballot status, that we should also be able to deal with some of these midterm elections that are coming up next year for Congress, and to be able to put certain people out there able to run very aggressive races for these particular offices. Because in many instances, what has happened now is that these districts now have been gerrymandered, and the proponents of that gerrymandering, those who have authored those new lines, have operated under the assumption that you would basically have maybe at best a two-person contest. And so there's nobody who recognized the possibilities of third-party politics entering into congressional races, and that surprise element might do us very well, not only in terms of the gubernatorial race and acquiring ballot status, automatic ballot status, but also important in the sense of getting some members of Congress out there so that we can have some real political voice in Congress and be very much in the same situation as the Tea Party. Now, the difference between us and the Tea Party is that we are actually a party. I mean, in the sense that in 2010, the Tea Party came to New York and couldn't get on the ballot. The Freedom Party got on the ballot. Now, the big difference, however, is that the Tea Party has a lot of media coverage, and the Tea Party is supported by a lot of millionaires. And those things, obviously, you know, are very important in politics. But the reality of it is that most people would not consider us in any way competitive with the Tea Party, and yet we've been able to do that here in New York, and we hopefully will be able to do that in other states over the next 4 or 5 years.
Speaking of which, Alden, how has the political establishment reacted to the Freedom Party so far? What evidence do you have that you are beginning to make a difference because you are beginning to get under their skin?
Well, I think the first evidence is that they are putting a lot of money in disrupting the Freedom Party. They put $7 million in 2010. And I can tell you there are people inside the Freedom Party who are not really striving for the formation of a Freedom Party, but who are being well paid. And obviously at some point, you know, we will get those numbers and be able to tell you how much money came into this process as well. We don't think it will be as much as it was in 2010, only because in 2010 we were going for automatic ballot status. And in 2013, we are not. But there's certainly that influence there. The second thing that you will notice is the ballot positioning. If you look at the ballot that they have that will be mocked up by voters on November 5th, you will see that we have again enjoyed an unfavorable position on the ballot. And so there's a lot of activity going around on that particular date. You know, we just simply as a people have a tradition that's gone to the polling booth and not think about what they were engineering before we got in there and not think about what they had engineered after we left. But what we realize is that this is an ongoing battle, and all of these little skirmishes that they engage you in are very important for creating a strategy to make sure that you never become who you think you should be. This year and next year, I think that there should be enough experience, and by that time, there should be enough committed people, and there should be an outing or ousting of people who are really there for other purposes other than to keep this frustrated, that we will be able in 2014 to achieve our objectives.
If you have questions for Alton Maddox, please do call at 888-874-4888 as we continue the conversation. 888-874-4888. Again, our guest is Alton Maddox, founder and strategist for the recently formed Freedom Party, which has a Plan A and a Plan B. And it, of course, is presenting an alternative. You know, Alton, this is one of the things that I constantly carp about. It is one thing to say what people are not doing and how a system is failing. It's another thing to construct the alternative to it, and you've done so. The party exists. How is the party faring in terms of financial support? How do you get things done?
Well, as you know, we are not this year seeking any public financing. So, you know, right there, that is one issue in terms of finance. The second issue is I think that there's really been more a grassroots effort this year where you really bind people together and enable them to put together their pennies in order to try to achieve some of the objectives. The other matter is that you have basically an unpaid staff. So, you know, you cut down on a lot of expenses in terms of that. And I think thirdly, you know, let's be very honest about it. You know, we have, as a people, learned how to do without. In the sense that we find some way other than materialism to achieve our objectives. And I remember the story my mother used to give. She went to college, and for example, at graduation, this was during the Depression, she was so poor that she had to get some cardboard boxes and craft them into shoes and then to paint them white because, you know, back then it was very customary for people, whatever they graduated or whatever, to wear white. And so she basically had to get some paper sacks and sew them up and so that she could have what appeared to be a dress. And then she had to get some cardboard material and turn those into shoes. So I think that, you know, we have a way of getting around that, even though obviously it's very important for us to have money. I'm not demeaning anyone financing the Freedom Party, but I'm just saying that as a people, we've always found ways to achieve our objectives while we didn't have the means to do so.
I want to talk now, Alton, about the business of being basically excluded from media coverage. Just about every day you send out a letter to ABC. You sent out letters to the major media outlets. But I'm also understanding that it's not confined to mainstream media that is ignoring what's going on with the Freedom Party. Could you talk a bit about what kind of experience you're having in terms of coverage by media?
Well, the experiences are good and bad. It's bad in the sense that we're not being covered. And we're not being covered even by people who look like us and who get their profits from us. And they're refusing to cover it. And they see it in the same light as the white media does, that it's a threat to white supremacy. Now, that's very surprising, but that's the way that it is. Now, on the other hand, I say it's good because in 2014, and people have to be aware of this, stations, radio and television stations in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, are subject to license renewals. Television stations don't get permanent licenses. Radio stations don't get permanent licenses. And what people don't know is that these licenses have to be promoting the public interest. And so there's some legal requirements that the radio and television stations have to abide by. Unfortunately, most of us are not aware of communications law. And so really, there's hardly anybody in our community that really raised issues arising out of communications law, arising out of the U.S. Constitution. And so the media outlets have gotten the courage to just simply run roughshod over us. Now, as you said, every week I'm out here trying to educate our community, a community that needs education and a community that never got it. I mean, there are some people who want to ignore it, and some people want to act like they have had it. I mean, but let's get real. We have to be honest with ourselves. It just didn't ever exist. And so every week I spend a tremendous amount of time crafting these letters and doing the research and all of those things, not only to educate our own people today as they read all of this, but also to establish a trial record in 2014, because there will be a challenge to these media outlets. And this is the only way that you can be heard, is to have maintained and established a record. So I'm not just simply sending things out to people because I just love to write. I'm sending things out because, unfortunately, I happen to be the only one out here who's engaged in this kind of work at a tremendous sacrifice to myself. But it's the work that I have decided that has to be done. And hopefully over a period of time, some of us will come alive so that we can recognize that politics is also about messaging. You got to have a message, and you got to send the message out. And that's what the media is about. And some parts of the media provide for free airspace. And so to the extent that you don't need anything but the requirement that they follow the law, you can get that. Here in New York, unfortunately, they've just decided we're going to take you to the Met. You know, we're just going to ignore this. We're going to take you all the way to 2014. And our resources and our scouts and our spies and others have told us that you don't have the resources because you don't even have a job. And so you can't really wage the kind of battle in D.C. that is necessary. Well, my position, we're going to wait and see, because I'm going to act as though I do, and I hope that at some point I'll be able to really bring these challenges about. Now, why that is important? Megan Edwards was a very important figure in our lives. A lot of people don't really know too much about Megan Edwards other than the fact he was assassinated in June 1963, and this is 50 years later. But Megan Edwards really ran one of the most aggressive campaigns in communications that we have seen. And it was because of his upfront attitude to the white media in Mississippi that the media in Mississippi assassinated him. It wasn't just, you know, some people out there in the Klan who were unrelated to politics or anything else and just hated blacks. This was an orchestrated matter, and it came about as a result of the media. Now, as a result of that, Megan Edwards, after his death, inspired others to carry on that struggle in Mississippi. And eventually, one of those television stations in Mississippi became black-owned, or a majority of the ownership of that television station was black-owned. So it points out what is possible if we are committed to this struggle. So while on one hand, you have myself, who is involved locally with the Freedom Party in New York City, but on the other hand, you have me trying to create in 2014 a repeat of 2010, and that is a statewide political party. And then on the third eye, you have me trying to develop the record that will go to the FCC. And that's a tremendous undertaking. And, you know, I mean, we're still in the hunt. I'm not satisfied with a lot of work of the people that have been around me, but we're going to reevaluate that. And after November 5th, I mean, you know, like everything else, heads may have to roll for the benefit of our people. And if that's the case, I don't have any problem with it, because everybody basically made a record themselves, those who heads will roll, that they are really on the other side. And I'm certainly not getting any help from them. I'm not getting any communications or anything like that. So, you know, the evidence of where they are is clear. And so we'll be dealing with that. But my point is that we are doing all of the things, Utrice, that are really necessary for the formation of a political party. It is not an easy process. And there's a reason why 150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, black people don't have a political voice in this country, and we're trying to correct that with the Freedom Party.
Reginald from New York, you're on the air with Alton Maddox.
Hello, Utrice and Brother Alton at War Maddox.
Yes, sir.
I'm Reginald, and much love to both of you.
Thank you.
And I'd like to thank you, both of you, for the great work you're doing. And I am one of those UAM members from 1987, so I'm well aware of the protracted struggle, and I am forever committed to this victory, and it will be absolutely sure. Thank you for allowing me to speak this today.
Well, thanks for the encouragement.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. So let's see if we can recap here.
Uh-huh.
The Freedom Party exists. It has already achieved major strides, certainly taking a look at what the opposition was. I mean, you really did climb a very rough side of the mountain here. You garnered enough signatures, not only to be on the ballot, but also to field candidates, and this is part of the growth. And this, in such a short time, this, again, is an extraordinary accomplishment that you have two candidates. You have Michael Graves for mayor and Michael Lloyd for public advocate. The strategy, Plan A, is to amass as many votes as possible to win, if it's possible to win. But you are realistic, and you're saying the Plan A is to maintain a presence in the realm of choice for people in these distressed constituencies and people who are supportive of a struggle for freedom for people who have been denied it for so long, who also may want to support the candidates in the general election. Plan B is to build consistently toward being absolute leverage, political leverage, and no political party, especially the Democratic Party, which leans heavily on the support of African Americans and Latinos in particular, that there will be no way that the Democratic Party could automatically dismiss this community anymore, these communities any longer, because the communities themselves would have their own alternative that is more in tune with their needs and with their desires. Is that a correct reading of Plan A and Plan B?
Yes. Yeah, and Plan B also includes, for those who think that winning is everything and winning being defined by placing black faces in high places, Plan B also explained to others that politics has a more expanded spectrum than just placing black faces in high places, and that it also deal with issues of policy and how you intend to get that policy implemented, and how in many instances a swing vote is sufficient in order to achieve that particular goal. So, you know, on one hand, you have people who just simply want to put a black face in a high place. But policy is a little bit more expanded than that. What we really need also is black policy, policy for black people that would promote our existence in this country. So Plan B becomes a lot more extended. And it also enables us to use political leveraging and political bargaining in order to achieve our objectives.
I come to a very touchy subject, Alton, and that is when a plan such as yours, as the Freedom Party, comes along, people are inclined to say, well, they're reverting to racial politics and they're practicing exclusionary politics. And so what you're doing is for black people, for Latinos, and therefore anybody who is neither black nor Latino, they don't need to be involved. They don't need to support it. They don't. They just need to go on about their business.
Well, I mean, there are some people who have that narrow view of politics. The reality, however, though, is that, for example, in the 1960s, Colonel Adam Clayton Powell was the architect of the war on poverty. The beneficiaries of the war on poverty were not only blacks and Latinos, but were mostly whites. The point is that it's very difficult to craft a policy and then make it discriminatory in its effects. And that's not certainly something that we want to do. We're concerned about ending poverty, for example. And to the extent that we end poverty, we realize that affects everybody across the board. We're interested in reparations. We also recognize that in terms of reparations, blacks may have a greater hold on that issue than anybody else. I'm sure there are others who are entitled to some kind of reparations, but I'm sure that blacks in this country are more entitled to reparations than anybody else. So what you have to do is look at the various things that are necessary to cure the social, political, economic ills of this country, and to some extent, everybody may be the beneficiary. In other extent, maybe a group like people of African ancestry may be the only beneficiary. But it all adds up to the welfare of this country.
Green from Baltimore, thank you for calling back. I know I didn't have a chance to take your call yesterday, so here you are today. Thank you so much. You're on the air with Alton Maddox.
Well, I just want to say that I appreciate you, Eutrice, and what you try
Thank
to
you.
Do. And
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Maddox, I was really pleased to hear that you have an education component to you know, your plans for a you know, third party, and of course that's in keeping with the ideas of Dr. Wilson and Kwame Nkrumah. And, well, there are a lot of things I wanted to comment about what you've been saying, but one thing that's really salient is that you have a great love for African people, and which is unusual since, you know, our enemy has taken a lot of effort and spent a lot of money to make us hate ourselves and each other. How did you come by your love for African people?
Well, I think the honest answer would be through my mother. I was actually born in Michigan. My parents were from Georgia. But when I was born, my mother had the insight, totally contrary to the way other people saw it, that we had to move back to Georgia from Michigan, and this was in the 1940s. And, you know, people confronted her and said, well, you know, you got to be crazy. I mean, why would you go to Michigan And, you know, y'all have good jobs up here, the whole bit. You got a good future. Why would you go back to the Jim Crow South? And my mother said, well, this is where I want to raise my children. And my sister was born 2 years later in Georgia. By the time we were back in the state. And beyond that, because she had a background in education, she went back to teaching school in Georgia. And she just literally raised me. I mean, I went to school with her every day. That's one of the great things about, you know, being somewhat apart from all of these regulations is the fact that, you know, in segregation, even though, you know, you understood the overall picture, but there was a lot of wiggle room in segregation to really advance a lot of people. And that's what my mother did, took advantage of that. And for the first, from the time I was 4 years of age, let's say until I was 11, I was there under her wings every day. In school, I started in school at 4 years of age, and I just continued from there. So I think that for me, she sheltered me from all of the ills that would come from segregation and allowed me to develop in some kind of wholesome manner.
Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Green from Baltimore. Thank you so much. Before we go any further, Alton, and your calls at 888-874-4888, how can people help the Freedom Party and assist the Freedom Party?
Well, I think right now, Eutrice, one thing that I would think would be beneficial, particularly to people in New York City right now, to really come out and get some personal educational training. You know, it's definitely better than doing a one-on-one. Tonight, for example, we're at the Brooklyn Christian Center, where we also, you know, have a Freedom Party headquarters, and that's at 1061 Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn between Clausen and Franklin. And you take the C train to Franklin Avenue to get there. We're only about three blocks away. I really feel that at this point, this is what is really needed. I mean, you know, there are other ways of getting access to us. But I really would love if people got out about 7 o'clock or so and really got some intense understanding of the political process and how to deal with it, because there's so much that I need to talk about, and I really cannot at this point, you know, have the time on radio because that's not available. And you got to remember that for the last 2 years, Eutrice, I have written political articles every day.
Every day, and, I got them.
Right, you know, I've been, and so, you know, but that requires so much from me and others in order to develop our process, because we have to also give respect to a person like Dr. Carter G. Wilson. You know, we have to give respect to what he wrote. We have to give respect to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and what he said, that Negroes are deaf, dumb, and blind. So it's a lot of intense work that has to take place. And even people who are around you for a while, you know, you see they just don't get it. So sometimes I would tell somebody today, I wish I had the resources where I could teach every day. I mean, I could just, you know, every day be like going to any other college and just come to my classroom and just learn all this, because you got to deal with law and you got to deal with the media. You got to deal with philosophy, and you got to deal with logic, and you got to deal with ethics, and you got to deal with history. You know, you got to deal with economics. I mean, the whole process just go on and on. So, you know, it's a lot that we got to learn to get back on track. And really it takes more than just a one-night stand in order for us to do it.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm, of course, you know, I've been around in the media for a while. I am incensed that the media that allegedly serve our community also is just too scared to, I mean, what, they're scared to talk to you. They're scared to talk to you about anything, and that is, it's a sad thing, but be assured that here you will have a voice. I understand what you've been doing all these years. I've known you for more than 30 years there, and what you've been doing in our community. And I understand there's no evidence at all associated with you in the form of trying to take the community, rip the community off. Quite the opposite. You have been giving sacrificially to this community for a long time, and your efforts have been earnest, sincere, and it's all about the empowerment of the people. I really appreciate that. So please know that there is a place here that you will get a hearing, and we will be able to talk about the issues that are relevant to the community. Very much so. Thank you so much, Alton. We've come to the end of our program today, but not to the end of the our discussion of the Freedom Party. Thank you so much for being with us today, Alton.
Well, thank you as well, Eutrice. And as everybody knows, you know, you're doing a tremendous job, and we really wish we could clone you in order to move this process along at a lot faster pace.
Thank you so much. Same here. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. So this is exciting to me, and I'll tell you why, because it is always a good thing to see when people are, they have every reason to go the other way, to just say, you know, this is way too much for me. I'm not about to take this on. I could live a comfortable life and do something else. But they choose instead to be of service to the community. And this we should admire and support. Thank you. See you again tomorrow at 1 p.m.